This week, we're back on the trail of the occult anatomy of man. We read part 3, all about the spinal column. The spinal column connecting the two worlds, heaven above and the spheres of darkness below. 33 segments, or rungs, of a ladder that leads to somewhere. Join us this week as we go on a virtual tour across the East, looking for clues to help us unravel the analogous puzzle of the spinal column and the occult world. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 600. That's right, 600 episodes all made possible because of you. Thanks to our contributors, fellows, and producers, and especially our legacy partners for assisting us in the production of this show since 2011, with quality Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences, quality, reliable, and on the level. If you're interested in how you can assist the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. The Whence Came You podcast also has an exclusive shop as well as a Amazon bookstore with books that come from my own personal recommended reading and listening lists, books by those who have been on the show, and also books that are recommended by our guests. Lastly, a couple other ways you can assist is by checking out some of our friends like Remarkable and the projects like Skull and Crown Limited, and even tarot readings by yours truly. Of course, you can learn all about those things on WCYpodcast.com. Now, last week, we released an episode a little bit late, and that's because I was in Virginia preparing for a festive board, which was for St. John the Baptist Day at Manassa Lodge, where worshipful brother Joe Martinez of the Masonic Roundtable fame is the master. He asked me to come and do a program, so we did that, and our families hung out. It was a great time. But it caused us to be a little bit late, and rather than just do two episodes or miss an episode, we made use of the opportunity of having a great interview with worshipful brother Joe Martinez about the magic that exists in some of our Masonic lodges, including Manassa Lodge, where he is the master. These are the lodges that seem to flourish, to do well, whether it's social, fraternal, ritual, education. They do it all, and they do it with a smile. So I wanted to talk to Joe about those things and get his opinions. You can check that out. It's last week's episode, episode number 599. Now, this week, we are going to get back on track with a reading from Manly P. Hall's The Occult Anatomy of Man. In episode number 597, we started to read the entire text. We read part 1. Then we followed it up in episode 598, where we read part 2. And this week, we're getting back on track. We're going to read part 3 of The Occult Anatomy of Man, all on the spinal column, and appropriately titled The Spinal Column. The Occult Anatomy of Man, part 3, The Spinal Column. Connecting the two worlds, heaven above and the sphere of darkness below, is the spinal column, a chain of 33 segments protecting within them the spinal cord. The ladder of bones plays a very important part in the religious symbolism of the ancients. It is often referred to as a winding road or stairway. Sometimes it is called the serpent, at other times the wand or scepter. The Hindus teach that there are three distinct canals or tubes in the spinal system. They call them the Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna. These tubes connect the lower generative centers of the body with the brain. The Greeks symbolized them by the caduceus, or winged staff of Hermes. This consisted of a long rod, the central Sushumna, which extended in a knob or ball, the pons of the medulla oblongata. On each side of this knob are wings arched over, used to represent the two lobes of the cerebrum. Up this staff and twisted around it wind two serpents, one black, the other white. These represent the Ida and Pingala. The ancient Hindus have a legend concerning the goddess Kundalini, in which it is said that she descended by means of a ladder or cord from heaven to a little island floating in the great sea. Connecting with this embryology, it is evident that the ladder or cord represents the umbilical cord, while the little island is the solar plexus. When the latter is cut away from heaven, the goddess flees in terror to a cave, the sacral plexus, where she hides far from the sight of men, like Amaterasu, the Japanese goddess of the shining lace. She must be lured from her cave, for while she is there and refuses to come forth, the world is in darkness. Kundalini is a Sanskrit word meaning a serpentine or twisting gas or force. This force, so the Eastern sages claim, can be drawn up through the central spinal canal, the Sushumna. When this essence strikes the brain, it opens the center of spiritual consciousness and inner perception, bringing with it spiritual illumination. The system of culture whereby this is made possible is the most secret teaching of the Eastern saints, for they realized that this spiral twisting force is not only illuminating, but like the serpent which is its symbol, also a deadly poison. Smatterings of Eastern occultism are coming all the time into the Western world, but we are sorry to say they are bringing with them endless suffering and sorrow. For these great truths in the hands of individuals incapable of rightly understanding or applying them destroy intelligence and reason. Along the spine are a number of nerve ganglia and plexuses. All of these have their place in religious symbolism. For example, we are told that the early Jews called the sacral plexus and the sacrococcygeal ganglion the sites of the Sodom and Gomorrah. There is a small plexus in the region of the kidneys called the sagittarial plexus, which the ancients knew as the city of Tarsus, where St. Paul fought the beasts. Higher occultism teaches that the lotus blossoms, nerve centers on the spine, are reflections of negative poles bearing witness of seven great positive centers of consciousness located in the brain. These seven function through the centers of the spine in approximately the same way that the seven spirits before the throne function through the planetary bodies. The disciple is warned not to work in the centers upon the spine, but to labor instead with their true rulers, the centers in the brain. The wanderings of the children of Israel in the wilderness, the pilgrimage of the Mohammedan to Mecca, the endless pilgrimages of Hindu holy men who spend their lives going from one shrine to another represent the pilgrimage of the spirit fire Kundalini through the nerve centers along the spine. By certain specifications, force is turned into these centers one after the other until, when seen clairvoyantly, they are great, flower-like areas from which light rays stream like petals. Each of these lotus blossoms has a different number of petals according to the number of nerves which branch out from it. It is said that the Logos, when the time came to create the material universe, entered a state of deep meditation, centralizing its thought power upon the seven flower-like centers of the seven worlds. Gradually, the life force descended from the brain, which was the great superior world, and striking these flowers one after the other, gave birth to the lower worlds. When at last the spirit fire struck the lowest center, the physical world was created, and its fire was at the base of the spine. When the world returns to it again, and it once more becomes supreme in consciousness, it will be because it withdraws the life from these seven centers, beginning with the lowest and returns it again to the brain. Thus the path of evolution for all living things is to raise this fire, whose descent made its manifestation in these lower worlds possible, and whose raising brings them into harmony once more with the superior worlds. This mystery of the life force that came down and took upon itself worlds is found among all civilized nations on earth. This is the Hiram Abiff, who built the Masonic Temple, the bodies, and was then slain by the three vehicles which he formed. This is likewise the Christ, slain for the sins of the world, because of the fact that this spinal fire is a twisting serpentine force. The snake has been used in all parts of the world to represent the world saviors. The urakas worn by the Egyptian priests upon their foreheads was symbolic of Kundalini, the sacred cobra who, when she was raised in the wilderness, saved all who gazed upon her, Moses and the brazen serpent. As the brain is the center of the divine world, so the solar plexus is the center of the human world. For representing semi-consciousness, it links the unconsciousness below with the consciousness above. Man is not only capable of thinking with his brain, he is capable of a certain phase of thought through the nerve centers of the solar plexus. It will probably be wise at this point to describe the difference between a medium and a clairvoyant. To the average person, there is no difference, but to the mystic, these two phases of spiritual sight are separated by the entire span of human evolution. A clairvoyant is one who has raised the spinal serpent into the brain, and by his growth, earned the right of perceiving the invisible worlds with the aid of a third eye, or pineal gland. This organ of consciousness, which millions of years ago connected man with the invisible world, closed during the Lemurian period, when the objective senses began to develop. The occultist, however, by the process of development hinted at before, may reopen this eye, and by means of it explore the invisible worlds. Clairvoyants are not born, they are made. Mediums are not made, they are born. The clairvoyant can become such only after years, sometimes lives, of self-preparation. On the other hand, the medium, by sitting in a darkened room, or by similar practices, may secure results in a few days. The medium uses the solar plexus as a mirror, and upon its sensitive nerves are reflected pictures recorded in the invisible ethers. Through the spleen, which is the gateway to the etheric body, the medium permits decarnate intelligences to come into his spiritual constitution, the result being voices and other spirit manifestations. Automatic writing is gained by permitting the etheric arm of an outside intelligence to control temporarily the physical arm of the medium. This is not possible until the medium removes his own etheric double from the arm, for two things cannot occupy the same place at the same time. The process of periodically separating the life forces from the physical arm is very dangerous, often resulting in paralysis. Mediumship is unnatural to man, while clairvoyance is the natural result of growth and the unfolding of the spiritual nature. There are 100 mediums to one clairvoyant, for the clairvoyant can become such only through self-mastery and the exertion of tremendous power. While the weaker, the more sickly, and the more nervous an individual is, the better medium he makes. The clairvoyant is unfolding his mind by filling it with useful knowledge, while the first instruction given the would-be medium is, make your mind a blank. The reason mediumship through the solar plexus is a retrogression may be summed up as follows. The group spirits who control the destinies of the animal kingdoms govern the changes through pictures thrown against the solar plexus, for the animal has no self-conscious mind. As a result, instead of thinking with its own brain, it thinks with the brain of the group spirit to whom it is attached by invisible magnetic cords. These cords convey their impressions and photograph them upon the sympathetic nervous system. Having no will of its own, the animal is incapable of combating these urges and consequently obeys them implicitly. Man governs himself through the cerebrospinal nervous system because he has developed individuality and the sympathetic system no longer rules him. Opening himself to impulses through the solar plexus area, the medium is thwarting his own growth by preventing the cerebrospinal nervous system from controlling his destiny. Man has always liked to lean on external things. He hates to face each problem and solve it with the brain God gave him. He consequently leans on the invisible worlds, asking them to help him to accomplish the labors which he should do by his own efforts. Thousands of people must carry karmic responsibilities of the medium, for many follow this calling because hundreds of people want to talk to deceased relatives or get inside tips on the stock exchange. Those who by their patronage encourage things of which they do not themselves approve are personally responsible for the injury which their selfishness has thus permitted other persons to inflict upon themselves. The difference, therefore, between mediumship and clairvoyance is about half the length of the spinal column. It is the difference between negative and positive. It is the difference between the midnight of the seance room and the noonday of the temple. All of the organs within the body of man have their religious significance. The heart with its chambers is itself a temple standing upon the mountain of the diaphragm. The spleen, with its little umbrella-shaped body, collects the sun's rays and has charge of the etheric body. It is this etheric body, coiled within the spleen, that injects the white blood corpuscles into the circulatory system. We know that the human body has been the inspiration for nearly all mechanical contrivances. Hinges are copied from the human body, likewise die ball and socket joints. We are told that the first plumbing was reproduced from the arterial and venous circulatory systems. Hundreds of machines and implements have been inspired by the subtle workings of our own vehicles. And for the human body is the most marvelously constructed machine that the human mind can study. The close relationship between the generative system below and the brain above, for the brain is a positive generative system, is of course due to the spine connecting them. At a certain time, a number of little doors which now separate the brain from the generative system are opened, and the Sushumna becomes an open tunnel so that every impulse is carried immediately to both ends of the body. It is for this reason that the candidate assumes the vows of celibacy for the close connection existing in the advanced disciple between the brain and the reproductive system necessitates an absolute conservation of all life energies. The tonsils are directly connected with the generative system. In fact, they are part of its positive pole in the brain. The customs of vaccinating healthy children and cutting out normal tonsils of general principle should be reconsidered. Most tonsils are infected as the result of the child eating too many sweets during the first years of life. The moral is, don't cut out the tonsils, cut out the sweets. Many parents are responsible for the illnesses of their children. Through either ignorance or indulgence, they allow the infantile consciousness, as yet uncontrolled by its higher vehicles, to destroy itself before life fairly begins. When children are sick during the early years of life, the physician will often find the cause of the ailment in the parent, and the father or mother, not the child, should be dosed with pills. If the stomach is kept in proper condition, the tonsils will give very little trouble. The absolute economy exhibited by nature in the building of all its structures should be sufficient proof that the Lord was not wasting his time when he made tonsils and appendixes. He apparently had reason for making them. But these poor, unoffending organs have become a gold mine to medical scientists who remove them at the slightest provocation. We are told that the vertical position assumed by the human body, which forces the contents of the intestinal tract to travel part of the time uphill, is the reason for the appendix, which is also missing in creatures of horizontal carriage. Every organ not only has its visible purpose, but also an invisible spiritual purpose. And the individual is to be admired who manages to go through life preserving intact as many as possible of his original anatomical parts and members. While on the subject of debt of science to the human body, we might add that the decimal system is the result of primitive man's counting on his fingers, whereby 10 became the unit of enumeration. The ancient cubit was also the distance between the elbow and the end of the second finger, or approximately 18 inches. So it goes back through the study of things until we find that nearly everything with which man has surrounded himself is an adaptation from the body with which God surrounds his spirit. Man is gradually gaining control not only over the organs of his body, but also over their functions. Science states that certain organs function automatically or mechanically, but occultism realizes that there is nothing mechanical about the functions of the human body. Let us take as an example a workman throwing a piece of iron amongst the wheels and levers of a smoothly working machine. There is a grinding crash and the machine stops. If, on the other hand, you figuratively throw a monkey wrench into the human body, it will immediately begin the process of throwing it back at you. It will surround the foreign element with a coating and try to absorb it. If this is impossible, it will try to eject it through some channel appointed for that purpose. If this mean fails it, it will in many cases accustom itself to the presence of the obstacle and keep right on working anyway. This shows unmistakably that the organic parts of man possess some inherent form of intelligence. Therefore, they are not machines, for no mechanical device is capable of intelligence. Paracelsus, the great Swiss physician, who after many years in the Far East returned to Switzerland to teach medicine, first gave to the European world its concept of the nature spirits. He taught that the functions of nature were under the control of little creatures who were invisible to the normal senses, but who, working through the kingdoms of life, mineral, plant, animal, and parts of the human body, kept all of these evolving in an intelligent way under the control of the great celestial hierarchy of Scorpio, which has charge of all bodybuilding in nature. These elements are the invisible intelligences governing the human body and its functions. As the result of man's ever-evolving consciousness, he is acquiring more complete control over the functions of his various organs. There are two kinds of muscles, voluntary and involuntary. The difference being that the voluntary muscles, which are controlled by the conscious mind of the individual, have fibers running two ways and crossing each other, while those which are involuntary are without cross fibers. The heart used to be considered an involuntary muscle, but it is now beginning to show cross fibers, thus foreshadowing the day when man will consciously and intelligently regulate the beating of his own heart. The same will be true with respect to all other organs that survive the periodic changes taking place in the constitution of man. The Eastern holy man can successfully live without his heart beating. He can stop it or start it at will. By lifting the tongue so that it closes the air passage into the lungs, he can remain in suspended animation for months. Many Eastern kalas, or disciples, do this while being given spiritual initiations out of the physical body. There are cases on record where these holy men have been buried in the ground. Weeks later, when the body was dug up, it was found to be dried like leather. Water was poured onto it, and after a certain lapse of time, the man who had not taken a breath in weeks got up and walked off. This is the result of extraordinary control which the mind is capable of gaining over the functions of the body. Occultism teaches that there is an entire universe within the human body, that it has its worlds, its planes, and its gods and goddesses. Millions of minute cells are its inhabitants. These tiny creatures are grouped together into kingdoms, nations, and races, and become one thing composed of many parts. The supreme ruler and god of its great world is the consciousness in man, which says, "I am." This consciousness picks up its universe and moves to another town. Every time it walks up and down the street, it takes 100 million solar systems with it. But because they are so infinitesimal, man cannot realize that they are actually worlds. In like manner, we are individual cells in a body of an infinite creation, which is hurling itself through the infinity at unknown speeds. Suns, moons, and stars are merely bones in a great skeleton composed of all the substances of the universe. Our own little lives are merely part of that infinite life, throbbing and coursing through the arteries and veins of space. But all this is so vast as to be beyond the comprehension of this little I am in us. Therefore, we may say that both extremes are equally incomprehensible. We live in a middle world between infinite greatness on the one hand and infinite smallness on the other. As we grow, our world grows also, resulting in a corresponding increase in the scope of our understanding of all these wonders. Well, there you have part 3, The Spinal Column, of Manly P. Hall's Occult Anatomy of Man. A wonderful piece, lots of great ideas and philosophies represented here. Of course, some vague references to things that may or may not be truly referenced earlier in any of his works. Other critical elements of this text are the sort of medical analysis around vaccinations and tonsils and things of this nature. Don't take Manly P. Hall as your doctor. Later on in the text, he talks about rather almost impossible to believe stories of people being able to stop and start their heart at will. I don't know that there's actually any evidence of this from any reputable source anywhere ever, other than anecdotal. The same goes for any of these sort of men buried alive and waking up and these kinds of things. However, legends do abound about these types of things. Perhaps it's not so much about the actuality of this happening or evidence of this happening, but rather the idea, the mythology, and the legends of this give us an idea of what could be possible through what we might call self-mastery. In any case, that's all for this week. We'll continue our reading next week with part 4 of The Occult Anatomy of Man, The Infernal Worlds. Coming up this week, course, if you live in the continental United States and you celebrate the 4th of July, I hope you have a safe 4th of July, and I hope the next time you hear my voice in episode 601, you still have all your fingers and toes. Once again, thank you to our producers, fellows contributors, and legacy partners. If you're curious on how you can assist the WCY podcast in bringing quality Masonic education to anyone interested that is on the level, true, and trustworthy, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
That's it. Here's your up.